Hi, everybody, and welcome to Two Off the First for September the 14th, 2022. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Great to have you here with us. We are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort. Two stories for you today. A little bit later than usual with the show today. As you might know, I go to church on Wednesdays with my children's school. So sometimes it's just going to be late on Wednesdays, but hey, that happens. So we've got two stories. And our first story is actually going to start with the LPGA. So Annika Sorenstam is going to become an official LPGA tournament host for the first time in her career, and it's going to start next year. What's going to happen is the Pelican Women's Championship, which is played in the Tampa area, and I believe after the first year, I think it was in February, but it has since moved to November to become the final event before the CME Group Tour Championship. So it created a little mini Florida swing between Tampa and Naples playing at Tiburon for the final event. And now that it's that part, you know, part of the schedule, it has taken on some increased importance. And what's going to happen is Annika is going to become the host of the event. The event is going to be renamed The Annika. I believe it's powered by or presented by whatever, by Gainbridge. And then Pelican Golf Club in the Tampa area will continue to host the event. Gainbridge have been a title sponsor on the LPGA for, I think, last three years, when they were involved with what has been called the Gainbridge LPGA. And they had it a couple times in Boca Raton. They had it in, I guess, in 2021 would have been in Orlando, or this year they had in Orlando at Lake Nona. And so they're kind of combining a sponsor and a host with Annika. They've had this relationship with Annika Sorenstam already at Gainbridge. So they're going to put it all together and make this new tournament. It's still basically the same thing. It's still 120 players. Still a full field event. I don't think they're going to make it invitational criteria. It's still going to kind of be your standard issue LPGA event. But the difference will be Annika's presence will be there. And this is really the first, I would say the first hosted tournament, unless you want to consider the Founders Cup a hosted tournament, which I guess in a way it is, because it celebrates the founders of the LPGA, the few that are remaining alive, unfortunately, but to attend. But now you've got a tournament geared around Annika Sorenstam. They did briefly, I guess in the 2010s, have a tournament geared around Lorena Ochoa. And that was a match play tournament in Guadalajara, Mexico. Didn't last too long, and then now they have the match play event at Shadow Creek, with Bank of Hope being the title sponsor of that, and obviously MGM Resorts involved in that because they own Shadow Creek, and they support a number of LPGA players with sponsorship. So now you've got a hosted tournament again on the LPGA, and I think this is really fitting. Obviously, Annika Sorenstam is the greatest of all time, at least in the modern LPGA. I guess you could go talk about Mickey Wright and Babe Zaharias and some others as potential more, I don't know, raked in more majors, but or had more cultural significance at the time. But I think you'd argue, be very difficult to argue that Annika isn't the greatest modern competitor in women's golf history. I mean, she's done things so many people have not done. She went 72 times in the LPGA, including 10 major championships. She competed on the PGA Tour Colonial, which actually I would consider a remarkable success, given the pressure that she faced and the criticism that she took for taking an exemption and, you know, taking a spot from a guy, so to speak, even though that really wasn't the case. She's the only person to ever shoot 59 on the LPGA Tour. She's won the U.S. Senior Women's Open. She came back last year to kind of prepare for that and prepare for the U.S. Senior Women's Open. Played a couple events in the LPGA. She made a cut in a regular LPGA event past the age of 50. I mean, she's still pretty darn good. Now, she did say this year that she was disappointed not to have gotten the same kind of return on time and investment, so to speak, in competitive golf as she did the prior year. And I think that was kind of an indication that, okay, she's got other stuff she really wants to do that perhaps she's going to be a little bit more in tune with. And that maybe involves doing this. She's probably going to play in the event. She hosts the Scandinavian Mixed event on the DP World Tour. I don't know if that's going to continue because Henrik Stenson was the co-host of that event in a male-female combined field Well, he plays LIV Golf now, and there's no way the European Tour Group is going to let Henrik Stenson continue to host. So does that event fall apart, or does it just become the Scandinavian Mixed without hosts? Not really sure about the future of that, but this would seem to suggest maybe there's a pivot that's going to happen there, and that event is going to change its identity a little bit. Hopefully it still remains men and women together competing. I think that was really cool. I think it's a great idea, and it's something a little different. But this gives Annika an opportunity to basically stay in her Florida home. I mean, she's at Lake Nona. It gives her a chance to stay there, then host the event. Tampa's not that far away, hour and a half, so I mean, it's easy to drive to get over there, hang out for the week, hand out a trophy, do a press conference. Sounds great. You know, that, I mean, that's pretty much exactly what she needs to be doing. I think if you were to be a cynic, you would say that a lot of this stuff that has come about in the last 18 months has something to do with the reputational damage that she suffered when she went and got the presidential medal from Donald Trump just, what, a couple days after the insurrection at the Capitol. And she's not the only one who did that, by the way. Gary Player, too. But to have done that may have damaged her standing in society and golf to a degree. So maybe this is a little bit of trying to make good for that, or make up for that, or smooth that over. I don't know. Obviously, I do believe she wanted to win the U.S. Senior Women's Open. Had an opportunity to do it. She did it. So I think that there's something to be said for that as well. And I think she still wants to keep really close tabs on the game of golf. She has other investments and interests and business offerings, but most of them are involved in the game. And she has become, and has done this for well before any controversy around her, but she has long been involved in junior golf and collegiate golf and the Annika Award, and trying to kind of keep her name in the game, but also trying to support causes around the development of golfers, particularly female golfers. And so this kind of all falls in line with that. Putting the cynical stuff aside, she has, throughout her entire off career, so to speak, her sort of retirement, semi-retirement, most retirement, whatever you want to say, but since she's been gone from the game, nearly 15 years, and in that time, she has dedicated a lot of her resources to promoting golf, being relevant in golf. So this is a natural extension of that. Frankly, kind of surprised it didn't happen sooner. The LPGA needs these kinds of events. I think the Founders Cup gets really well received because it's a chance to celebrate the tour's history and everything that's been accomplished in 70 plus years of LPGA golf. And a lot has been accomplished, particularly on the financial side of things, in the last 2 or 3 years. It's really been incredible. And I know we've seen a massive rocketing up of purses on the PGA Tour. Obviously, LIV has had some influence on that, but that was going to happen in large part anyway, just maybe not on this time frame or timeline. But for the LPGA, they weren't operating in parallel with the PGA Tour. They haven't just all of a sudden found a television contract worth two or three times what they were getting before, because what they get now really isn't that much, certainly compared to what the PGA Tour gets. Obviously, there are reasons for that. But all of a sudden, the LPGA has worked with title sponsors, particularly at the major championship level or near major championship level, if you want to include CME Group, and I think you should. And those sponsors have said that they believe the compensation in women's professional golf should get much closer, if not equal, to the golf that we see on the PGA Tour. And you've seen a sudden massive increase in the purses of the majors, and that has started to lead to an increase in week-to-week purses on the LPGA Tour outside of the majors. And that will continue to increase, I believe. I think that there is an increasing movement in this country by business leaders and potential sponsors, as well as just kind of sports fans, to make an investment of either time, money, or assets into women's professional sports. And we're seeing that, I think, in women's golf on the LPGA, which is great. So all that to say, Annika's going to be a host. I think that's kind of fitting. I would love to see the same opportunity for Kari Webb. She's not that kind of personality. But then again, I didn't think Annika was that kind of personality. And if you sit down and talk with Kari Webb for a while, she's beguiling. I mean, she's really interesting. Just a really interesting person to talk to. And she's accomplished a whole hell of a lot in her life and her career. I think it'd be pretty cool to have an event in her honor. And I think the LPGA should lean into its history a little bit more. I'd love to see a little bit more of that. So, especially with the upheaval, moving what was the ANA Inspiration, the former Dyna Shore, moving that away from the California desert, taking that to Texas, that's kind of a move, not in spitting in the face of history, but taking away some of it just because you won't have the annual reminder of it all. But leaning into it a little bit more with Annika, good thing. I think we should see more of that. I think there should be an event honoring Sayri Pak, by the way, transformational figure in women's golf. I mean, truly transformational figure. She changed the game, period. And that she doesn't have an event honoring that. And I'm kind of shocked by that. If we're going to do an Annika event, we should do a Sayri Pak event. Just saying. So congratulations nonetheless to Annika. It's a cool thing for the LPGA to be able to do this. Again, lean into its history a little bit more and continue to kind of build relationships with sponsors that believe in the product and are willing to invest their money and time into it. Our second story today is sort of live-related, but indirectly. The Wall Street Journal has been really interesting lately, reporting about things related to the PGA Tour. Some kind of relationship there with Greg Norman, I think. They have tried to break a couple of different pieces of news around investigations of the PGA Tour that were started by the Department of Justice, probably influenced by Greg Norman to a degree. The antitrust investigation that I think they broke that story. I'm pretty sure that they did. And they've just kind of taken a more, I'll say, PGA Tour critical tone, not necessarily live-friendly tone, but PGA Tour critical tone. And so they came out today, a couple folks on their staff did a report on private jet expenditures from the PGA Tour, particularly related to PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan. And in their report, they said that the Monahan's contract with the PGA Tour requires him to travel by private jet for his business, personal and professional. So he flies on a private jet when he goes to tournaments, and he also flies on a private jet when he goes to either homes that are in his name or in a trust, in his wife's name, apparently. There's some in Colorado. There's one in Colorado, one in Montana, Missoula, Montana, and some flights to Turks and Caicos, some other flight records basically made available through like Flight Tracker or one of those type of things where you can put in the tail number and figure it out. The PGA Tour owns a Citation X, apparently, and that's what Jay Monahan flies on to and from tournaments when he needs to go to them, does it for personal business. And I guess I don't really know what the news value of this is. I don't really know what the scrutiny is. I mean, if you have an issue with private jets, absolutely, by all means, scrutinize away. That makes a ton of sense. But if you're trying to create some kind of criticism of Monahan in particular, maybe he negotiated that part of his contract. Maybe that's just kind of the way that it is for the commissioner of the PGA Tour. I don't know. And there really doesn't seem to be much of an indication of that from what the Wall Street Journal report says. But it does seem pretty clear that this is a little bit of a hit piece, trying to be critical of how the PGA Tour spends its money and what it spends its money on. In addition, obviously, to having the private jet stuff, which, you know, that racks up a cost, but you own the jet. So if you own the jet, it's not like you're paying $20,000 an hour or whatever to run it. I mean, you run the fuel cost, of course, but how often do you run the jet? And then how often you run it versus how much you own it? What's that on a per mile basis? If you kind of amortize it over time, all that kind of stuff. But there are some other critical components of this in this piece. And one of it highlights the $81 million new PGA Tour moat / headquarters that they built. And I guess you could be critical of that. But if you saw the PGA Tour's headquarters before, you would laugh at it. I mean, it wasn't great. It was kind of gross and ugly. and they needed to modernize it. It looked a lot like what they had developed when they developed the clubhouse for TPC Sawgrass in the early 80s. I mean, it had the same feel to it. Obviously, they had since spent a ton of money to build a new gargantuan clubhouse for TPC Sawgrass. That didn't seem to be criticized in this report, but the $81 million price tag for the new headquarters was. Now, that was, I believe, put into place well before COVID started, so they probably signed contracts. They probably put themselves on the line for that already. Did they need it as much? I don't know where they're at with their work-from-home stuff. Obviously, a fair amount of their people go on the road week to week, but there are also tons and tons of people who work at the PGA Tour, particularly their headquarters and their production capacity that don't travel on the road. And the PGA Tour has made a big investment in itself to build these studios that they have built so that they can broadcast PGA Tour live, that they can basically take over running the production, or at least some facets of production of PGA Tour events from week to week. They've made that investment in it. So, again, not knowing the entire breakdown of what went into what to create that building and what they got out of it, including all that studio capacity and stuff. Okay, fine. I think you can certainly have critical complaints about the PGA Tour's compensation packages. Monahan, according to a 2020 filing, I've not seen this, by the way, the 2020 filing, but it's been reported by them. I don't know where they got it. I assume they had a source that gave it to them because I do not have access to that Form 990, which is supposed to be made public. But it says that Monahan had compensation of $14.2 million in 2020. That would have been an increase of about $6 million from the last one on public record, which was, I believe, 2018. Tweeted about that not too long ago. So it went up pretty substantially. And then big amounts of compensation to former commissioner Tim Fincham, which was basically his exit package from the PGA Tour. And, you know, I think it's $20 million, somewhere in that range, based on the report. So a lot of money going to Tim Fincham as he kind of goes out the door and then Monahan takes his place. And I mean, we've talked about this for years in different places I've done blogging, reporting, and writing. But if you look at the PGA Tour's executive compensation, it's a lot. I mean, if you kind of got into the top 15, 20 people on the PGA Tour, you're easily into seven figs every year for your salary. Is that much different than other professional sports leagues? I don't know. They're not Form 990 companies, so they're not really putting out total compensation for their staffs. I think you would probably find similar bouts of criticism with how some people are paid who are running baseball or the NFL or the NBA. Maybe not the NHL, but you get the idea. If you look at the Form 990s for the USGA, by the way, Form 990 is what a not-for-profit organization has to file. It's their version of a tax return, even though they don't pay tax, right? But if you look at the 990s for the USGA, the compensation that Mike Davis had up until the very end, I mean, it was seven figures. It was low seven figures, but it crossed it. And I imagine Mike Wann is going to be in the same range when we see their first 990 with him as the CEO. That organization does a lot of things. Don't get me wrong, but they also rake in a whole lot of money relative to the amount of full-time staff that they have. You can be critical of that, or you can choose not to be. But it does seem like the Wall Street Journal has kind of become a bit of a intentional thorn in the side of the PGA Tour. And I don't know if it's agenda-driven, or if it's relationship-driven, or it's just curiosity-driven. But I don't feel like the Wall Street Journal has given two hoots about the PGA Tour in a long time. And I mean that in terms of a professional capacity with their coverage of golf tournaments or in terms of being critical of their business structure or their business decisions. So I don't know where this came from, but it is interesting to note that probably someone who wasn't too thrilled with the PGA Tour and had access to these documents probably provided them to the Wall Street Journal. And so I guess we'll see if they have more information that comes out. This read to me like a whole lot of griping and nothing burger to me, but maybe there's something juicy in there that I'm just not seeing and understanding. It's worth a look if you get a chance. If you're a subscriber, take a look at it. Other sites have kind of blogged about the summary of the story. So if you want to read that too, you can do that as well. But worth a look. I didn't walk away feeling like Jay Monahan was fleecing the PGA Tour. So that's maybe in the eye of the beholder. But I'm sure we will continue to see stuff like this coming out. And maybe we'll see stuff about Greg Norman's enterprises. I have no idea. I don't know where this leads, but it seems like it's just another in a long winding road of just stuff that's not fun. It's not fun to deal with, and we're going to keep dealing with it for a couple of years. So buckle up. That's going to do it for us today on Two Off the First. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. We appreciate it. Give us a 5-star review if you have a chance and you listen to us on a service that lets you do that. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Ballinger. You can follow Golf News Net on your favorite social media service at the handle Golf News Net. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you tomorrow.